everybody. Thanks for joining us for another meeting at the EdTech Club. And this week, well, we're talking about something that might stress you out a bit. Well, and it might depend on who you are and maybe even how old you are. You see, we live in a world filled with information. It feels like we're getting information thrown at us all the time. And some of that is thanks to information technology, of course. Now, how you feel about information technology, and specifically, how you feel about your ability to learn about it, and how to use that knowledge to, say, advance your career, well, that can be determined by your generation. So, in this meeting of the EdTech Club, we're talking about my generation, well, and your generation, and most generations that are existing today. Our guest speaker this week is going to be Andrew Savickas. He's an executive at a company called Get Abstract, and their mission is to take academic papers, even TED Talks, even podcasts and business books, and condense them down into essentially academic abstracts to give you the big idea of a publication so you can understand it at a glance. Andrew will talk a little bit more about what they do, but this isn't necessarily about them and their business. It's about a new study they commissioned and carried out, all about generational attitudes toward continuous lifelong learning. And in this study, Get Abstract surveyed over 1,000 people and split them up by generation. So in their estimation, the baby boomer generation was born from 1946 to 64, Generation X from 65 to 76, Millennials 77 to 95, and Gen Z is 1996 through 2001. And it turns out that Gen Zers and Millennials are more likely than those older generations to embrace an idea of continuous lifelong learning, especially when it comes to new technologies. At the same time, they also feel more stressed to continue this education process. Of course, as educators, you know that you have to be preparing yourselves all the time, relearning pedagogy, learning new research-proven ideas. I mean, after all, that's why you're here at the EdTech Club, and that's why you follow TCEA. So, we're going to jump into this idea with Andrew Savickas. We're going to talk about the differences in generations, how they approach continuous learning, and how educators can take the results from this survey and use it to think about how they create a love of lifelong learning. That's all coming up in this episode and our interview with this week's guest speaker, Andrew Savickas, and it all starts right now. Okay, folks, I'm not going to hold you any longer. We're going to jump right into our conversation with Get Abstract CEO, Andrew Savickas.
So I'm Andrew Savickas. I'm the Chief Strategy Officer at Get Abstract. We're the world's leading provider of summarized knowledge. We find, rate, and compress business books, other learning materials, and deliver them to a global audience of mostly corporate learners, but also a lot of educational institutions, students, and teachers.
Mm-hmm. And
What
kind of stuff are you summarizing here?
Sure. Our bread and butter is business books. So the same kind of things you find in an airport bookstore, leadership, management, performance, those sorts of topics. And those are used by executives, by leaders, by new managers, people throughout the organization as a way to digest the key insights from those books and help them with something they can read quickly on the train, on the bus, before a meeting, you know, get everyone on the same page before you have an important conversation. That's primarily what we do, although we've expanded into things like we summarize podcasts, we summarize TED Talks, we summarize economics reports. We've even summarized things like video courses as well.
What you do at Get Abstract is you sort of condense this knowledge so that people can, you know, continue to grow and learn, usually in their careers as they go. So it's worth noting that the subject matter of this study, you know, relates to what you do as a business, might be good for you. But what are the general findings? Well, what did you do to get this new information? What was the survey like, and what did you find it?
Sure, it's a great question. And first, let me just briefly mention that although you're right, most of the customers that we serve are professionals in a corporate setting, although we do believe that students, you know, well before they get to the workforce, need to understand and build a habit of learning. And we do actually make it abstract free for students to access. So there's information on that on our website. So that is something we do want to help help people have access to that knowledge. So the survey really came out of some things we saw looking at data. You know, as with many companies, we spend a lot of time looking at how people use our products and use our content. And we started to see some interesting patterns in differences in behavior when looking at the usage of the content that we provide based on people's age, you know, which generations or cohort they fit into. And so that got us thinking, well, is there something here? What if we sort of ask some more detailed questions of, you know, not just people who might know our product and use us, but is there some broader conclusions that could be drawn by asking a wider audience? And so we use SurveyMonkey, which is a tool many of folks have used and experienced, and they have a service where you can find a general population panel and you can identify some parameters there. And we did that. So we surveyed a sort of a general population panel of people over the age of 18. And collected their responses on topics related to continuous learning. And you know, that's where the survey results kind of came from.
Okay. And what kind of questions did you ask?
You know, it was questions that would try to get to things like, you know, how important is it that your employer provides learning resources for you for continuous learning? Or, you know, how important do you think it is to stay current in skills for your career? You know, and perhaps most interestingly, you know, questions about, you know, whether or not this sort of need or desire to sort of always stay current generates any kind of stress or anxiety. And in fact, it does. And that kind of varies a bit based on people's ages as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it, going through the information, it seems there is, to put it, you know, broadly, a generational divide in how people are thinking about the need for lifelong learning, what you describe as upskilling, as, you know, constantly refining your leadership abilities, your actual, you know, skills, honing your talents. Tell us a little bit about the divide between age groups you found.
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, I think probably the biggest discrepancy or the biggest difference in age cohorts was in, you know, just how important people felt that the it was for people, you know, to engage in this kind of continuous learning, to constantly be wanting to improve your skills. So with the younger generations, looking at millennials and Generation Z, that was, you know, more than half would sort of say that. And as you look at sort of Generation X and the baby boomers, that drops down closer to a third. So, you know, the majority of people in the workforce as millennials, as Generation Z, you know, really put a high priority for their own career development on constantly improving up in their skills. And it's interesting. I was thinking about this as sort of my own life experience. I'm a late Gen X, right on the sort of borderline there. But you know, when I think about you know, a telephone was pretty much the same thing for the first 18 years of my life. Mm-hmm. And you know, contrast that to someone who would have been born 18 years ago. Now, you know, a telephone has meant very different things to them throughout their, you know, what, think about how much has changed when you think about a phone, a smartphone, and what it does. And now we have phones in our watches and phones in our ears and all this sort of ear pods and all this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, or I think about, you know, in high school, I took a typing class, and we were taught how to type on typewriters. And the expectation was you were being, you know, instilled with a skill that would serve you well throughout your career. You knew how to type, that would be a great thing to be able to do. And of course, that remains true today, but that's very different from learning how to code, for example. When you learn how to code, you're not learning a computer language that you will then use throughout your career the way you learn how to type. You're really learning a new way to learn, which is how do you understand the basic concepts that you can then apply to the ever-changing landscape of technology, languages, and platforms and systems that you will encounter throughout your career.
Mm-hmm. So instead of learning Spanish and Hindi and Mandarin Chinese and all these things, you learn about linguistics and you learn how language works.
you know, you're exactly right about that. And I think there are some parallels with how, you know, how people learn music, for example, or languages. You know, I have the pleasure of working for a very cross-cultural organization. Company is founded in Switzerland. And I would say the majority of the people who I engage with in the company who work in Europe speak multiple languages. And what they all will say is once you learn one language, it's often much easier to learn more of them. And you hear that with music as well, because there is this understanding those fundamental, as you call it, linguistic sort of patterns and structure that you can apply to multiple languages that you learn. The same thing with musicians. Once they learn one musical instrument, it's the same sort of thing. And now what we're seeing is many more of the skills and disciplines that are part of our working life have that same need to develop not just an understanding of what one skill means, but how do I learn how to learn multiple skills, because these are going to have to keep changing over the course of my career.
And so when we look at these different age groups as well, these kind of age cohorts, we see an importance in this lifelong learning and developing skills. Over half of the respondents who are millennials and Gen Z, meaning born since maybe the early 80s through the present, more or less. Those young people are, and these are all over 18 in your survey, those young people are all pretty convinced that they will need to do this throughout their lives. But another result you found in this survey was that they have higher levels of stress about this need as well.
You're absolutely right about that. And, you know, there's a couple of probably reasons for that. You know, you're talking about people who are earlier in their career. You know, anyone earlier in their career is going to be a little bit less confident, a little bit concerned about making sure they really have what they need to succeed in, you know, the years ahead of them. You know, at the same time, I think one of the things, and this is sort of a hypothesis we have looking at these survey results, is, you know, you also see the importance that respondents placed on the participation of their employer in supporting them. I think, you know, one of the things that you know, might be the cause of some of that anxiety is this understanding that you have to keep up, but not really knowing what's the most important skill? Where should I go? How much time should I spend? What's actually gonna, you know, there's all kinds of possible skills I could be developing. There's new things out there. There's blockchain, there's AI, there's machine learning. Is that gonna be important for my company? Is that gonna be important for my job? I don't know. And so I think the thing that can really help reduce that stress and reduce that anxiety is, you know, first of all, for employers to help their workers understand what are the skills that are likely to be needed within the sort of the jobs they see coming on for their organization. And the other is to set some clear kind of boundaries and parameters for, you know, the amount of time and energy that people are expected to spend learning, you know, both to make sure people don't over sort of exert themselves and over, you know, spend so much time trying to keep up that they lose track of the work in front of them, but also make sure to recognize that you know, this is now part of what it means to have a job, is to keep up with these skills. I had a great conversation a few weeks ago with Paul Michaelman, who's the editor-in-chief of MIT Sloan Management Review. And, you know, his point was, you know, making sure that companies understand that this is, learning is now work. And it's not just a nice to have that people should do on the side in their spare time. And, you know, that doesn't mean everyone comes to a class at the same time to follow the same teacher and get the same outcome, but doing things like, you know, providing content and tools and the permission to use time at work and use activities at work and use things at work, permission to use those as learning opportunities to engage with content to help people improve their skills.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting to think particularly about education here, because educators not only have an investment in understanding the students they're working with, so in most cases today we're talking about Gen Z, though you have to help prepare students for their careers and for life in general, and try to, you know, create a lifelong desire to learn. So we have to understand that perspective. At the same time, educators themselves have a requirement to keep learning kind of above and beyond a lot of corporate positions, for example, where this is, you know, professional development is a required part of a teacher's job, and they have to always be going back mm-hmm. and improving their credentials. Today, a lot of educators are going and getting more certifications. They're getting different kinds of badges from different programs. As you reflect on these results and the kind of the differences in age groups, tell us a little bit about what you think this might mean for an educator who has both a professional responsibility to keep learning and a professional responsibility to create learning for the students.
Yeah, those are great questions. You know, on the sort of professional development side, I think one opportunity is to, you know, look to the kinds of resources and content that are being consumed within the sort of corporate market as an indication of some of the kinds of skills that are going to be important for students that we are at least preparing to, you know, to some extent trying to help prepare for success in the workforce. You know, so I think there is a lot of information and resources out there. You know, the things that companies are talking about, you know, now as critical skills and critical skills gaps that they see over the next 5-10 years are exactly the kind of things that can be helpful to look at. Is it time to, you know, for example, is it time to say data science is a topic we should think about introducing into our curriculum so to make sure that students have the terminology and the understanding of what it means as they get further along and start to get toward the workforce. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's certainly one thing I would say, you know, to sort of understand what's there. And in terms of helping the students, I think there is value in helping the students learn, helping guide them in learning how to learn these things. And, you know, understanding that this kind of learning is different from a lot of what is the structure in place in most of the academic institutions and schools is really, there is a sense of completion. There's a sense of a grade is completed, a course is completed, a degree is earned, a certificate is earned, and a course that has its place. And yet this is different. This is more like, you know, the idea of, you know, you wouldn't think it was possible to complete being fit. Or you wouldn't think of it as possible to complete eating right or being a good parent. Those are things that are never done. They're things that you can only always try to be better than you were before. And so, you know, helping students understand that difference in the kind of learning so that it maybe doesn't stress them out that they're not necessarily earning the badge or complete certificate. What they're doing is, you know, the equivalent of, you know, putting in their time exercising every day so that they're more, you know, it's not about, you don't do 30 minutes on the treadmill to become an expert running treadmills. You do the 30 minutes on the treadmill every day because it makes the rest of your day better because you're, you know, you're healthier, you're fitter, you're happier. And that's the same kind of thing with these sort of learning models is it's not necessarily about, you know, achieving a specific objective and more about building a attitude and cultivating a mindset of continuous learning and improvement. And that's a critical thing that I think teachers can help to do. You know, not that it's not already part of what they do every day, but as you know, one of the reasons to help do that is to help prepare students for the realities of this rapidly evolving workforce.
Yeah, and that touches on some of the things you asked about in this survey. You know, we talked earlier a little bit about how younger generations might have a certain level of stress, perhaps greater than older generations, about mm-hmm. the skills they need to learn. And you asked about a lot of different finite areas where people might think they need continuous learning for their career. And I mean, this is everything from you know, people management and basic people skills like persuasion and time management through things mm-hmm. like social media marketing, but then really big ideas like cybersecurity and digital transformation and a lot of different little tech issues here and there. It seems to me like part of the, you know, the hesitation or the worry on some people's part is we don't know which of these skills will be important. Mm-hmm. The world changes so fast. And you know, millennials and Gen Z have seen the ways we communicate and the way information technology is used one, be ubiquitous throughout their whole lives, but change throughout their whole lives. Does that speak to why there might be some of that kind of worry about not knowing which skills are important? And does that speak to the need to just always be learning, I guess?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And again, I think that gets to, you know, things that can be done either by a teacher or by an employer to help provide some guidance into where to put that attention and focus. Because there is so much option, so much possibility, so many different places that students or workers could put their attention to learn. And it's helpful for them to understand where it's going to be the most effective. But you're absolutely right about that pace of change. And the same dynamic that you've identified, where you have a generation of students and young employees who have been exposed to this, you know, this rate of change that's just so fast compared to what it was before. The same dynamic is at play within industry and within the workforce, where, you know, 15, 20 years ago, you know, technology was the IT department, and that was a vertical piece of the organization. And sure, people there understood technology changes, it happens fast, and they sort of, that's where you saw that, the sort of techniques and habits for quick adaptation and quick learning would be there. But, you know, if you're over in the accounting department or, you know, over in sales or marketing, things didn't really change as fast, right? Mm-hmm. And what sort of happened over the last 20 years is, you know, technology is now, you know, just as it's infused every part of the life of a Gen Z, it's infused every part of an organization. So that now every department, whether it's marketing, whether it's finance, whether it's HR, all of them are now getting pulled along by this relentless pace of change that's driven by technology. And so everyone in every you know, job is now needing to understand how to adapt and change, you know, this pace. And so in some ways, this sort of newer generations who have grown up in that environment are already comfortable with that. The anxiety doesn't come from how fast things are changing. It's coming from understanding, you know, which things are changing I need to pay attention to. So, you know, I think in some ways they're arguably more prepared for an environment of rapid change, as long as, you know, the environment around them, the employers, the teachers can help kind of guide them to, you know, where to put the attention to understand what's actually going to be the most important.
And over the course of decades, really, in education, we've seen a movement from, you know, sort of the rote memorization we might think of from an earlier time, to the kind of learning to learn that is emphasized in a lot of places today. And it seems to me that the results here might kind of speak to that, that, you know, you can't just memorize recipes and expect to be able to cook for yourself your entire life. You probably need to learn how to use an oven and a stove and how ingredients work so that you can improvise to some degree.
Yeah, that improvisation, that's a great word to use. And you know, that's something that, you know, there's a great paper that was published of a talk that John Seely Brown did back in 2012. And he called it Cultivating the Entrepreneurial Learner in the 21st Century. And, you know, I think his term entrepreneurial is really appropriate. He talks about how what that means is someone who's constantly looking for new ways, new resources, new peers, and new mentors to learn new things. You know, that's the kind of student that we need to help generate, you know, build learning environments that really foster that kind of a learner. And, you know, your point about improvisation, something else that he mentioned in his talk is one of the keys there is getting people to play with knowledge and play with things, you know, which is very consistent with, you know, that's not very far off from the Montessori method, you know, about things that teachers have long known are important in getting students to actually enjoy and maximize learning is to get them to experiment and improvise and learn through trial and error. And that's exactly right. You know, it's not about, you know, learning the road steps, and if you didn't do it the way you're supposed to, then you didn't do it right. But helping them to understand how to play and how to improvise and how to figure out their own path forward is really a key here.
Mm-hmm. And so Get Abstract organized this survey, and just so I have it in the show quickly, you did it through SurveyMonkey, as you mentioned, over 1,000 respondents, they're full-time workers above the age of 18. So that's a pretty sizable sample of people in the workforce. Mm-hmm. Of course, for you at Get Abstract, this is giving you information on how to approach what you do, which is essentially knowledge dissemination. And if we have to think more broadly a little bit, if I'm thinking from my perspective as an educator or an administrator, what these results might mean, what do those angles look like to you? You know, what are you learning and what do you hope people in that position might learn from this information?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, one of the things that we also, you know, to complement the survey, have really started to look to is how are our customers, how are companies who are dealing with this, with the realities of the things we found in the survey, how are they actually responding to that for their own needs? And, you know, a couple of the things that I think are most interesting is the techniques that organizations are using to help to foster and cultivate this continuous learning kind of mindset and this notion of sort of constant growth. So, you know, a couple sort of common patterns as we talk to different customers and sort of learn what's out there is, you know, the old model would be, let's give someone a course or give someone a handbook or give someone a training resource and assume that they're going to consume it or finish it. They're going to know that skill and be done with it. And what we're seeing now is a lot more things like, internal email newsletters and blogs that are specifically focused on, skills the organization wants to improve awareness of, and, you know, following that up with mobile apps and mobile resources that can help help to give an employee an idea of, you know, here's the three topics that really are important for every skills that we really want everyone to be, you know, familiar with, be that machine learning, be that data science, be that simply a soft skill. And you know, here's an app or here's a tool that you can use on your commute to spend 15 minutes a day, getting up to speed or sort of following this path. You know, I think that's another pattern here is we still see paths being laid for people. We see this idea of a journey in a direction, but the difference is, typically now those paths don't really have an end, and that's okay. And I think, you know, I think the thing that's shifted in a lot of the companies that we work with is they're not tying everything to course completions and certifications. They're saying what we're going to do is we're going to put the paths in front of people. You know, it's rather than giving them a map, it's more about a compass and saying this is the direction that you need to go, and we're going to help put things in front of you that are going to keep us going in the direction we know, even if we don't ultimately know what the end point's going to be. So those are some of the things that I think could be, you know, potentially applied and learned from what we've discovered in doing the survey.
Okay, we are just about out of time for this meeting. I thank you for this rich discussion. And of course, our thanks to Andrew Savickas and everyone at Get Abstract for sharing their time and insights with us and all of you. If you want to check out the survey, if you want to learn more about this, of course, go ahead and check out the show notes. We'll have everything you need there, as well as links to the research by John Seely Brown that Andrew mentioned in the interview and more. Now, we are back for the spring semester. I went easy on you last week, but we are going to have some homework and some extra credit. So for homework, check out the survey, look through it. There's a lot of cross tabs. There's a lot of specific questions that were asked that we didn't cover in our conversation. So if you want to dive deeper in, that's how you do it. Go ahead and check that out in the show notes. And if you want some extra credit, check out that piece by John Seely Brown. And go ahead and contact us. Let us know your thoughts, your ideas, and your suggestions when it comes to lifelong learning and what this means for folks of different age groups. You can hit us up at podcast@tcea.org. And of course, as always, if you want to keep up with TCEA, you can find us on social media, especially on Twitter, Facebook. Those are great places to interact. And you can begin to become a part of the TCEA community, which, by the way, we have our own TCEA community, kind of a message board you can check out. So if you're a TCEA member, don't forget to go to tcea.org, log in, and check that out. And of course, if you're a member of the EdTech Club, you're a fan of this podcast and what we do, make sure you are registered for our 2020 convention and exhibition. It is coming up very soon, February 3rd through 7th here in Austin, Texas. If you're not registered yet, there is still time, and I would highly recommend it because we are going to be recording live EdTech Club podcasts with some of the biggest speakers and presenters at the convention. It's all going to be in our attendee lounge at the event happening all week. 10 different live podcast recordings happening, so it's a great benefit, a little extra learning along with the convention experience. So check that out at convention.tcea.org. And of course, if you are a member of our EdTech Club and a fan of this show, don't forget to go to your podcast player, Google Podcasts, and leave us a review. Give us a rating. It really helps us out, and it'll help spread the word about the ideas and topics we're talking about. Okay, that's it. So for homework and extra credit, go ahead and check out the links in the show notes and keep up with TCEA, and come back here for another meeting of the EdTech Club next week. Until then, I'm Andrew Rausch. Thanks for being a part of the club. EdTech Club is a production of TCEA. To learn more and to join, go to tcea.org.